Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the Packers chalk up a 35-14 victory over the Chicago Bears, a game that really wasn't as close as the final score indicated, I think. Thursday night football at Lambeau Field. Packers really in control right from the beginning. And in talking about this one, I think it starts up front for the Green Bay Packers, and I'm talking specifically about the offensive line, because call it makeshift, call it patchwork, whatever you want to call it, this lineup was as impromptu as it gets, and it didn't look like it. And that I'm saying that in the most complimentary way possible, because they stepped up and performed.
Yeah, don't call it a comeback. The offensive line, this was incredible. That was the one thing that really stood out to me the most in this victory. One, I thought it was smart game planning on the Packers' perspective. I thought Mike McCarthy, the plays that he called, Aaron Rodgers getting the ball out quickly from his hands, allowed them to get into rhythm. Also got some help from the defense along the way for some favorable situations and down and distance and field position. But at the end of the day, Mike, it comes to the five guys in front of Aaron Rodgers, your two-time MVP quarterback. Three of those players, undrafted free agents coming into the NFL. Another one, Jahri Evans, has a chip on his shoulder after getting cut by his team last year,
right,
coming back on a one-year contract. And then Corey Linsley at center, the one guy that has been kind of the hallmark here, the staple for the number past number of seasons. But everything really does start and stop with Lane Taylor.
Yep.
The fact that this guy, 1 year as a starting left guard, had never played left tackle before at any level of football. He said he took one snap at right tackle during a spring game his sophomore year at Oklahoma State, and it was mostly just out of it being a joke. And here he is, starting left tackle, protecting the blind side of Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think he could have played any better than he did.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that is what stands out the most, because we've seen the Packers, you know, piece it together before. But it's been done with guys who have played left tackle. The Packers have drafted left tackles,
right,
numerous times over the years, and they play them everywhere along the line. Josh Sitton, T.J. Lang, J.C. Treader, all these guys played left tackle in college. Lane Taylor was the exception. He was an undrafted guy, not only that, but he didn't play left tackle. And then he's the guy who has to fill in on a short week, no less, against the Bears. Then you have Lucas Patrick, another undrafted player, making his first NFL start on a short week, minimal
right,
preparation to get ready for the opponent, all of that. And this offensive line went out there and did the job. They started pounding the ball with Ty Montgomery early in the game. Packers running a lot of play action rollout type of things to keep the pocket moving, keep the Bears guessing as to just where Aaron Rodgers was going to be. Now, the injuries didn't stop, unfortunately. Both Ty Montgomery and number two running back Jamal Williams leave with injuries. So the running back situation then gets turned over to Aaron Jones, the rookie fifth-round pick out of UTEP, but he steps right in and makes some nice plays, ends up with his first NFL touchdown. The Packers just keep filling in and rolling, and you hope maybe that this spate of injuries is going to start to decline a little bit and they can find some sort of normalcy over this 10-day break before the next game.
You definitely do, Mike, but the fact that the Packers are 3-1 despite all of these things that have happened,
yeah,
I think really speak to them and also these guys stepping up. Lane Taylor found out on Tuesday that he was going to be starting at left tackle. The day that he practiced for the first time there, he was informed he was going to be playing in that position. Aaron Jones hadn't had an NFL rushing snap in the regular season,
right,
before this game. Ends up having 13 carries for 49 yards and his first NFL regular season touchdown. He was a guy that wasn't even active 2 weeks ago. He's been kind of platooning with Devontae Mays as the number three guy that's been active on game days. So
right,
it just so happens his number gets called. I thought the offensive line did a tremendous job. I mean, for as well as they did protecting Rodgers, he was only sacked twice. I actually thought they did a great job of opening up some lanes as well for these running backs, particularly on that left side with Lane Taylor and Lucas Patrick. And then, you know, Aaron Jones showing some of the explosiveness and bursts that I think you and I both saw during training camp in the preseason. But this was a challenge. This is a very formidable defense they've played. You know, things haven't been going well for Chicago. A lot of things working against them. But they have pass rushers, you know, and they have a lot of weapons there. And the Packers, in spite of all the things that were working against them, were for the most part able to neutralize them.
Yeah, I mean, to be able to come out with essentially this makeshift offensive line we've been talking about and go out there against your division rival, your arch rival, and march down the field 75 yards in 10 plays right out of the gate. You know, the Packers like to defer if they win the opening coin toss. Well, the Bears won the toss and deferred. So the Packers just took the ball and took it right down the field. A big third and one conversion to Marty Bennett for 26 yards, sets up first and goal. The Packers eventually get it in the end zone. You're on top 7-0 just like that, and everybody's like, oh, well, maybe this offensive line situation isn't so bad after all. But I tell you what, the other thing we have to say with regards to the offensive line, this guy named James Campen, he can coach, can he?
He really can.
I mean, this is a guy who, for a good part of his professional life, was most famous for being the first center of Brett Favre's consecutive game streak and for being Tony Mandarich's roommate when Mandarich arrived as the number two overall draft pick that year from Michigan State. But this guy is quite the offensive line coach with the situations that his players have been put in and a short week in this particular case, all of this. I give James Campen a heck of a lot of credit.
Yeah, and also tip of the cap to the Packers personnel department. I mean, Justin McCray was working at a hotel a year ago, gets a walk-on tryout at his alumni's pro day at UCF and ends up doing a serviceable job at right tackle. I think when the season's all said and done, regardless of how it turns out, we're going to look back at this early stretch and be like, I do not know how they were able to get through that. But so far they have.
Yeah, and we've got some more to talk about with regards to the Packers defense, and we'll get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, shifting gears to the defense here against the Bears, the 35-14 victory on Thursday Night Football. The Chicago Bears tried to catch the Packers off guard on the first play of the game. We all knew the Bears were going to come in and try to run the ball. They've got two really talented young running backs. That's how they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers the previous week, was pounding the ball on the ground. So the Packers go up 7-0 on that opening drive, like we said, and the Bears go play action. They're going to try to take a deep shot on the first play of the game, and it backfires tremendously. Clay Matthews gets in there, knocks the ball out of Mike Glennon's hand. The Packers fall on it at the 3-yard line, Jake Ryan with the recovery. A couple plays later, the Packers are in the end zone, and the Bears have run one offensive play, and the game is 14-0.
Yeah, and that was really the turning point right from the beginning. 2 points I want to make on this. One, I actually did like the play call from the Bears' perspective. They were not able to get the downfield passing game going, despite the fact they won against the Steelers. The Packers were operating their base defense, really loading the box to defend the run. So I get the play call there and what they were looking to accomplish. Unfortunately for them, the Green Bay Packers have actually been pretty good rushing out of their base defense, the little that they've done it this year. And Clay Matthews, number 75, ends up becoming a strip sack for a fumble recovered by Jake Ryan, who gets it at the Green Bay 3-yard line. A few plays later, Aaron Rodgers hitting Randall Cobb for the touchdown. Clay Matthews afterwards, you could almost tell somewhat, I think he was ready to move past this. As much as the accolade means to him, it is something that's been really discussed for the better part of a year now.
Yeah.
The bigger thing for him was what that play meant for the Packers. And really, and I wrote this in our locker room report out of the game on Packers.com, it was the first domino that started off a series, a chain of events that led to four takeaways for the Packers defense.
Yeah, the four takeaways were really the deciding factor. The Packers did a really good job against the Bears running game, don't get me wrong, but this game defensively was about the turnovers. There was a shotgun snap that Mike Glennon wasn't expecting. That turned into a fumble, and then two really bad overthrows by Glennon that HaHa Clinton Dix and Kentrell Bryce were there to pick off. And the Bears becoming almost looking like a Jekyll and Hyde team in terms of how they played at Soldier Field versus how they played on the road through the first 4 weeks. So that's something that that they've got to try to get straightened out. But we talked about how the turnovers, Dom Capers' defenses, they live and die by the turnovers a lot of times, and the fact that the defense had only had one through three games, and it was a big one against Seattle,
right.
But you were waiting to for some more to come along, and as they always say, they come in bunches, and they came in a bunch on Thursday night.
I remember talking to Blake Martinez about this on Wednesday and him saying that's usually the thing they preach. They just don't want to get out of their techniques, because if you do, that sometimes is what jeopardizes maybe not being in the right spot to make a play. The second fumble was amazing, though. It was sort of like the magic loogie, from Seinfeld,
yeah.
Where I don't know how that ball got to where it was. Like, yeah. I'd like to see a diagram of exactly how it ricocheted and what the velocity was to make the ball
do that. Yeah, that was something. It was almost like it bounced off of Glennon's leg and was going faster the other direction than when it was snapped. It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was weird. Crazy. But Blake Martinez jumps on it. Just a remarkable play by him, being able to have that awareness. Packers did a tremendous job really knowing where the ball was, and once they got their hands on it, making a play. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix gets the first interception of the year. Kentrell Bryce gets his first pick of his NFL career, even though he's had a couple in the regular season. So for the Packers...
Preseason,
yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Packers end up really, you know, getting those things. I think that turned the momentum, and as Clay Matthews said afterwards, and you mentioned it right off the bat, when the Bears have one offensive play and they trail 14-0, you want to talk about what is really the worst-case scenario for them and how they want to play. They want to feed Jordan Howard. They want to get Terry Cohen going, and it's really difficult to do that consistently once you're trailing like that.
Yeah, it's not an offense that is built to come from behind, and when they fell behind as big and as early as they did, it really was hard for them to stick to the game plan, you know, which was to pound those running backs. I mean, they felt Mike Daniels was out of the game. Nick Perry's playing with a club. I think they felt the Packers were potentially vulnerable with their run defense. But when you fall behind 14-0, 5-6 minutes into the contest, it's hard to completely stay with your game plan. And the Packers eventually got it to 21-0, and it was 35-7. The Bears got a touchdown right before the end of the first half to make it 21-7 and had a chance, you know, you're thinking to get back in the game on the opening drive of the second half. That didn't happen. There was a missed field goal in there, if I remember
46
right.
46 yards.
Their last touchdown was in the fourth quarter after it was already 35-7. It was really kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, Kenny Clark was talking, you know, hearing him, I think it was his conversation with Larry McCarron after the game, lamented a little bit about the rushing yards. The Packers ended up giving up 103 rushing yards. They had only 39 allowed through the first three quarters.
Yeah.
That's sometimes where information gets lost. I thought the Packers really controlled the tempo there. The fact that they held Howard and Cohen to, I think it was 3.2 yards per carry, didn't allow them any big runs, was really a big part of this thing. And the Packers really played well out all their packages, despite the fact that they had some inside linebackers going in and out. Josh Jones leaves momentarily. There was some shuffling going on, but they responded well to it.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, Mike Daniels misses the game. Devon House misses the game. Both Josh Jones and Blake Martinez exit briefly, but both return to the game. So that was a good sign in the health department for the Packers. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz there. And Wes, we've avoided the topic to this point, but it's because it deserves a discussion of its own, and I'm talking about the hit on Davante Adams in the third quarter. I believe it was third quarter. He takes a short pass over the middle in the red zone. He's getting held up by some Bears players. Forward progress clearly stopped, but he's basically a sitting duck as linebacker Danny Trevathan drills him with the crown of his helmet, a helmet-to-helmet shot or helmet-to-face shot, I guess, whatever you want to call it. And a scary moment. Adams knocked out. He's motionless, laying on the field. His mouthpiece went flying on contact. And players immediately taking a knee, you know, hoping and praying that he's going to be okay. The early signs that we were told right after the game, everything looks pretty positive for Adams. He, in fact, was kind of giving apparently the hospital workers a hard time, you know, trying to let him go. He wants to go home. He was taken to the hospital for some evaluation of the head and the neck, and really wasn't in any mood to be there. So I take that as a good sign. But boy, that's a scary moment, and I guess it's good that we can maybe joke about it a little bit right now, because it was no joking matter at the time.
Yeah, there were several guys in the locker room afterwards that you know, kind of like said all the right things in terms of the injury. Jordy Nelson was probably one of the more outspoken ones. He didn't really so much put it on Trevathan. His biggest issue was that he wishes that the whistle would have been blown sooner.
Yeah.
To maybe call off the dogs, so to speak. You know, the fact that, as you said, Adams' forward momentum had stopped. He was a sitting duck at that point. The issue I have, and I saw Mike Pereira, I think, made the point that this is the first time in 4 years, at least from what he's seen, that the crown of the helmet rule has been enforced, or at least been called, since I think it came into effect in, I think, 2014. So what I struggle with on this play is Danny Trevathan's played a lot of football in this league, Super Bowl champion, I believe, as well with Denver before he left.
Right.
I don't think you can have that play in the National Football League.
No.
I think you need to I believe he's sincere in his apology, was very apologetic after the game, but you have to retrain yourself as a football player
yep.
to not put yourself or the player in that danger. I mean, that's the other thing that's underrated, Mike, is that Danny Trevathan's going in there head first as well. So we'll see what the NFL rules. We'll see exactly what the, you know, punishment, if there is any. I would envision there will be. But that was as ugly as a hit as I've seen during my time on the beat.
Yeah, and it was as scary a hit as I've ever seen in person watching a game. And I've covered plenty from the Lambeau Field press box and other press boxes around the league. And that was vicious. It was nasty. And I know, you know, Aaron Rodgers gives Danny Trevathan the benefit of the doubt. Doesn't believe he was trying to intentionally do what he did. Trevathan said that wasn't really his intent. He wanted to reach out to Adams and get him a message. But you're right, Wes. This is exactly the type of hit that the NFL needs to get out of the game. And my problem with the way this is handled right now by the NFL, the only thing that happened during the game was a 4-yard penalty. It was half the distance to the goal on a personal foul from the 8-yard line. It was a 4-yard penalty and nothing else happened. The NFL, I think at some point, if you're really going to be serious about the player safety and about sending the right message at the time, not a few days later, you have to let the officials, you have to let a booth review, whatever it is, take a look at these plays, take a look at these replays at the time in order to have some sort of adjudication, some sort of punishment in the moment. Not everybody waiting a few days, oh, what's the league going to say about Danny Trevathan? That's what we're going to be waiting for.
Right.
But how effective is that message across the league when all that happens on the field is a 4-yard penalty?
John Hussey, the official for this game, said afterwards, from my perspective, I just didn't see enough to have it rise to that level. When asked by ESPN.com's Rob Domofsky, the poll reporter, of why Trevathan was not ejected. But I will say this, Mike. There is a danger, not only from him staying in the game, but also the precedent that sends. It's, as you know, Jordy Nelson said afterwards, they weren't going to do anything, you know, off call. You know, they were going to play it straight. They weren't going to do anything to get any revenge on him. But there are some people out there in the National Football League that would.
Absolutely.
So I think that was the other thing, too. It's not even just about him being ejected and the showmanship and the pageantry of that. It's also the fact that more could have happened. But be that as it may, take it for what you are. It was an unfortunate play.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking about this one in future episodes.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we have to take care of a little sponsor business. So picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz. Wes, before we go, we haven't even talked about the Mother Nature element of Thursday night football. A lightning storm blows through Green Bay, creates a 45-minute delay between the – roughly 45 minutes, I guess, between the first and second quarters. And from the rain standpoint, that was quite the monsoon that came rolling through. I joked in our insider inbox that if there hadn't been the lightning coming along with it, that might have been some pretty entertaining football to play in that rain as that came down. But there was a lot of lightning involved. They had to clear the players off the field, clear the stadium bowl, got back to business between 45 minutes to an hour later. But that was a little bit of excitement for a Thursday night.
Yeah, excitement's one word for it. There's also something to be said for being here until 4 o'clock in the morning, having to write about it. But whatever the case may be, we're running on deadlines. I can't be too bitter. Really interesting situation for the Packers. They have to go back in their locker room. The Bears too, but the Packers talked about it. Morgan Burnett, I'd asked him this after the game, exactly what that process was like for him, because he hadn't actually been a part of a game that was delayed by weather since going back to, I believe it was his junior year at Georgia Tech when they were playing Florida State.
Okay.
So sitting in the locker room for 45 minutes, guys, you know, put in their headphones, listen to music. And as Burnett kind of said, he just sort of basically stared at the clock the whole time. There was some stuff in there, some foam rollers and different things that the training staff had allowed, you know, brought in there so guys could stay loose. But for Burnett and a lot of guys, it was just slow agony waiting to get back out there. They got off to a great start. They wanted to finish it.
Yeah, the Packers didn't want to see that momentum snapped, but as it turned out, the Bears really were never able to seize any momentum. The Packers really in control of this one from start to finish. And now Green Bay, 3-1 at the quarter pole, will be tied for first here after four games with the winner of Sunday's Detroit-Minnesota game, which will be a fun one to watch since we don't have a game to cover on Sunday.
Yeah.
But Minnesota already ruling Sam Bradford out at quarterback still with that knee injury, but the game is in Minneapolis. You know, Detroit a whisker away, I guess you say, from being 3-0 going into this game, but they are also 2-1 just like the Vikings. How do you see this one?
It all depends on Case Keenum, Case Keenum shows up in this game. If he plays the way he did against, you know, this past week, it's going to be a good opportunity for the Vikings to keep their momentum rolling. If he doesn't, it's going to be tough to go, because really it seems like that passing game is what sets up Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and we'll be able to talk about that one next week when we're back on Packers Unscripted, but that's a wrap on this edition. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.